On today's episode, we explore what Moshe Feldenkrais says is the most important reason for why movement as the basis of his method, the Feldenkrais method. Why are we interested in movement when we talk about the Feldenkrais method? Why movement? So the Feldenkrais method is in the world of embodiment and somatics. It's about becoming aware of your patterns so you can make new choices. And movement is a critical piece of becoming aware of your patterns and making new choices. Feldenkrais says all of your habits hinge on movement. Your sensing, your thinking, your feeling habits, all of those habits hinge on movement. Cool. Let's explore what Moshe Feldenkrais means when he says our habits hinge on movement. Let's check it out. Welcome to the Expand Your Ability podcast. I'm your host, Jeffrey Schwinghammer. This show explores how we can connect to who we truly are by stepping out of our thinky-thinky minds and entering through our sensation and movement into our experience. So today we're going back to the book. This is Moshe Feldenkrais's 1972 book, Awareness Through Movement. He's giving arguments to people, to the readers, about why movement is a great way to understand yourself and improve yourself. So in this section, he offers 9 reasons for why movement. And this is the 9th reason, the 9th episode, exploring the 9th reason and the final reason why movement. So you can start with this episode and then work your way to the other ones. That would be no problem at all. For this section, I'm going to read it through paragraph by paragraph. And as we go, I'm going to weave in some thoughts and reflections on the material to try and clarify it. Let's get started. All right, so why movement number 9, Hinges of Habit. The title is Hinges of Habit. He says, finally, and most important of all, there's one more reason why we should choose the action system as the point of attack for the improvement of man. All behavior, as we noted before, is a complex of mobilized muscles, sensing, feeling, and thought. Each of these components of action could, in theory, be used instead. But the part played by the muscles is so large in the alternatives that if it were omitted from the patterns in the motor cortex, the rest of the components of the pattern would disintegrate. Okay, so what's he saying here? He starts with, we should choose the action system as the point of attack for the improvement of man. So the action system, I think he's saying movement here, right? Why should we look at the motor plan, the activity of our muscles, our movement, as the point of attack, as the way into our experience? And so he goes on to say that our experience is based off of mobilized muscles, movement, sensing, feeling, and thought. And so this is something he opens the book with, actually. So in our experience, all 4 come together: moving, sensing, feeling, thinking. In everything we do, all of these come together. All 4 aspects are in every action. And so you can't really divide them out. We can't really separate thinking from feeling or from moving or sensing. They all come together. And then he says the movement is so fundamental, so large, right, in our experience, that if you were to go do some other approach to improvement, right, so something dealing with your feelings, dealing with your thinking or your sensing, right, so you could have conversations, you could explore what's going on internally through journaling, or some sort of therapeutic process, or listening to music, or seeing beautiful art, or going on a hike, right? That all of those things can contribute to the positive development of you. And if you were to take movement out of that, right? If you were to cut out movement out of that, like all of those patterns would just kind of disintegrate because movement is such a fundamental aspect of everything else that we do that maybe we should look at that as a great way in to improvement because everything else depends on movement to such a large degree. The next section, he says, the motor cortex of the brain, where patterns activating the muscles are established, lies only a few millimeters above the brain strata, dealing with association processes. All the feeling and sensing that a man has experienced were at one time linked with association processes. Okay. I'm not familiar with this particular brain anatomy, but what I think he's saying here is the motor cortex is really close to the part of the brain that deals with association processes. So I think he means when you have an experience, you make an association out of it. Okay. What kind of associations could we be talking about? So when you're younger, you're really impressionable by the world, and there's a particular music or song that you just love. And even as an adult, and you think back and you hear that song again, you can feel how much you loved it as a child. Or it could be the way your mother spoke to you as a kid. Whether you like the way she spoke to you or not, that even as an adult, that can still resonate in some way that we feel it today, whether we enjoy it or dislike it. The way our father may have comforted us or, you know, gave us a comforting presence or not, right? And so how we relate to that, what we associate, was there punishment around the corner if we did something wrong? Those create associations and feeling and sensing our own experience. And so the movement processes are right close to that, right? Those associations are close to the motor cortex. All right, so in the next section, the nervous system has a fundamental characteristic. We cannot carry out an action and its opposite at the same time. At any single moment, the whole system achieves a kind of general integration that the body will express at that moment. Position, sensing, feeling, thought, as well as chemical and hormonal processes combine to form a whole that cannot be separated out into its various parts. This whole may be highly complex and complicated, but is the integrated whole of the system at that given moment. Okay, what's the idea here? The nervous system has a fundamental characteristic. We cannot carry out an action and its opposite at the same time. So I think you could put this in other words as we can only take one action at a time. That the whole nervous system acts together in some sort of integration. The quality of that integration might be questionable. You might not like it. It might produce pain. It might be ineffective. But the whole system is acting as a whole. Right? And I think an important word to bring in here, or phrase, is cross-motivations. Cross-motivations. So we can have multiple motivations in a moment that conflict with each other. They kind of pull us in different ways. Let's say we want to get close to someone, but we're also distrusting. We also have learned to pull ourselves away from people for our own safety. But you want to get close to someone, but you also want to move away from that person. Right, that would be a cross motivation. And so I'm thinking what Feldenkrais would say is like all of that, all of the cross motivations would create a sum in that action, right? I'm going forward and I'm going backwards. And the sum is zero and probably a lot of discomfort and frustration and anxiety. But I get to a sort of sum of zero. But it's still the whole body working as a whole. So in the Feldenkrais method, it's okay, how can we weed out these cross motivations? How can we weed them out so we get clearer and more pure in our intention? That we're more pure with our motivation. Pure in the sense that it is all of us working together in a good way, in an effective way. Oh, I'm reminded of something I heard in one of his lessons that he taught. A similar idea here is that you can't stand on your foot. Yeah, this is it. You can't stand on your foot and scratch the sole of your foot at the same time. Right? This is an example of we can't carry out an action and it's opposite at the same time. Because the foot is stabilizing you, holding you up, right? That you can't actually lift the foot so you can scratch the sole of your foot. Because you would fall, right? You need that for standing, and so it's acting in, it has a job, and you can't go against that job at the same time. You can't achieve the opposite of that job in some sense. All right, let's continue on. So the next section, he says, within every such integration, we become aware of only those elements that involve the muscles and the envelope. We have already seen that the muscles play the main role in awareness. It is not possible for change to take place in the muscle system without a prior corresponding change in the motor cortex. If we can succeed in some way in bringing about change in the motor cortex, and through this a change in the coordination of or in the patterns themselves, the basis of awareness in each elementary integration will disintegrate. All right, some big ideas here. Let's see if we can break it down. Within every such integration, so integration here is basically an action. A verb. You do something. You move. This moment, some integration inside you is doing something, whether it's standing or walking or listening. Within every such integration, we become aware of only those elements that involve the muscles and the envelope. Okay, so I'm thinking this is because the muscles give us feedback of our own experience, our sensation, the envelope or skin, the overall tonus of our musculature gives us a sense of how we are doing. Because we don't really feel the brain calculating, right? That we don't know what the nerves are doing, but we can see the effect in our body. So he says, it's not possible for change to take place in the muscle system without a prior corresponding change in the motor cortex. So this is the same idea, right? So if the muscles are to change, the cortex that controls the muscles have to change, right? The big boss with the map that's running the show has to make the change, and then the muscles follow suit. Yeah? So the muscle system reflects a change in the motor cortex. And so if we can change the motor cortex, that then gets at the basis of our integration. And so all the associations, the feeling, the sensing, the thinking, those associations as an integration can disintegrate. Well, he says the basis of awareness in each elementary integration will disintegrate. So by changing how you move, you change how you think, how you feel, change how you are aware of yourself, and allows a cascade of more changes that way. All right, the next section. Owing to the close proximity to the motor cortex of the brain structures dealing with thought and feeling, and the tendency of processes in brain tissue to diffuse and spread to neighboring tissues, a drastic change in the motor cortex will have parallel effects on thinking and feeling. All right, so he's making an argument that the proximity of the tissues and how changes, processes, will have a change to its neighbors, right? Like the, because the neuroplasticity, the ability for the brain to change and adapt, like it's the proximity, these processes close to each other allow them to affect each other. To change one changes the other. So that's his argument here. I'm not familiar with the science on this side of the neuroplasticity or the change in the neuronal connections. I know Feldenkrais was like on the cutting edge of neuroplastic thinking. And so he's making the argument that the motor cortex will have an effect on thinking and feeling, even if you might not intuit that. He's saying that based on what the science is, that you will have an effect there. And I would say this is true. You know, all the things with Feldenkrais and awareness through movement, his class lessons, or functional integration, the one-on-one sessions, with all of this in the Feldenkrais worldview is, yeah, he's making some arguments here, but like, it's something for you to experience. It's something for you to have some direct experience and see if it's true for you. That is really central to the method. You know, I can make these claims, but come in, give it a try, see what happens, see if it is true for you. And I'll say, like, it's definitely true. As I'm in these movement explorations, in the first minute, first 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, I can watch how my thinking begins to change, how my emotional state can begin to change. I might come in a little bit agitated, and after some time, after some movement, my breathing will get a little bit deeper, will shift more into my belly, and my thinking will get a little bit clearer, or sometimes I'll just have thoughts or insights kind of rushing through, and it's like, oh, it's like a different perspective, a different idea coming in. And that is actually a fundamental benefit of the work, is that when you change your movement, it's literally changing your perspective. It's changing how you feel and how you think in a way that allows you to be a little bit more objective and a little bit more distant from the challenges or the preconceptions or your old habits or your old ideas, whatever you had before. It gives you a little bit more distance from them. And that is the space in which awareness can be developed. Awareness of what is so familiar to us can be brought to the surface, and wow, there it is. I can catch it. I can catch that pattern of mine. All right, back to the book. This is the last paragraph. He says, a fundamental change in the motor basis within any single integration pattern will break up the cohesion of the whole and thereby leave thought and feeling without anchorage in the patterns of their established routines. In this In this condition, it is much easier to effect changes in thinking and feeling for the muscular part, through which thinking and feeling reach our awareness has changed and no longer expresses the patterns previously familiar to us. Habit has lost its chief support, that of the muscles, and has become more amenable to change. Some big ideas in here. Let's go through it bit by bit. So, a fundamental change in the motor basis within any single integration pattern will break up the cohesion of the whole and thereby leave thought and feeling without anchorage in the patterns of their established routines. So, by changing the movement piece of it, we're shifting the foundations, what the thoughts and feelings are anchored to. So common that people get up from lessons and they just are in a different space than they were before the lesson. They think differently. They feel differently. They're just in a different integration. In this condition, it is much easier to affect changes in thinking and feeling for the muscular part through which thinking and feeling reach our awareness has changed and no longer expresses the patterns previously familiar to us. So if your thinking and feeling are easier to be changed, if you change the muscular part, right? Because we become aware of ourselves through our sensation, through our muscles. Well, if we change that, and that makes it easier for changes to be affected in thinking and feeling. Well, to me, that means like in everything that you're doing where you're interested in changing how you think and feel, movement needs to be a piece of it. An awareness of how movement could help needs to be a part of the conversation. Right? Like if you want to brainstorm something new, how can movement, changing the motor patterns, changing how you sense yourself, you know, it could be walking around the room, walking around the block, rolling on the floor, how could that give you a different perspective? Right? If you're in a difficult conversation and your feelings are running high and it's blinding you, okay. What could you do with movement to change your perspective, change your experience so that the feelings that might be stuck can begin to become malleable again? So the last sentence he says, habit has lost its chief support, that of the muscles, and has become more amenable to change, right? Use movement to change how you think and feel. Use movement to get beneath those rigid structures, those repetitive structures, those ways you go back to old feelings and old thinking over and over and over again. Well, use movement to change it up. Get in there and find the crevice in which, like, the water can flow and then freeze and expand and then melt and freeze and expand, and you can open up a new way into what has been so rigid and, frankly, invisible. Our habits are so often unknown and so unknown to us because we just believe everything we think, believe everything we feel until we can get enough distance from it. And movement is a great way to do that. All right, so this was the 9th reason for why movement, 9 of 9. And so that's this series. We got to the end of why movement. Very, very nice work, everybody. So I hope you enjoyed this series. This was a lot of fun. I was enamored with this list of ideas since the first time I read this book, I don't know, at least 10 years ago. So thank you for listening to this. I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. I also encourage you to reflect on this in some way. What's a sentence or two in terms of an insight or a takeaway here for you? And is there a way to have a conversation with a friend or a family member? Right? Conversation is a great way to expand our thinking, to challenge our thinking, to deepen our learnings. So I encourage you to talk with a friend. See what they think about these ideas. And of course, you can always message me. You can send me an email. My email is jeffrey@expandyourability.com. You can also find that in the show notes. And I invite you to go into the show notes and sign up for my newsletter. So, I talk about the ideas on this show, and what is so essential is experiencing firsthand what these movements could do for you. So I invite you to go into the show notes, find my newsletter sign-up form, and join the newsletter. On there, I will be posting about classes or workshops or series that I'm doing. I'm in central Minnesota, so I'll definitely announce anything that I'm doing locally there. So please sign up for the newsletter, and we'll talk soon. All right. Thank you for your attention.